Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Reyes, Judge Jessen, the Honorable Renee L. Werke presiding.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Zoom Minnesota Court of Appeals, a new year, January 2021, the 7th of January. So thank you for appearing today. I want to remind you, if for some reason technology has an issue or an interference, wave, do something, and I will call it to our marshal's attention. And also a reminder that we have a new time clock, so you'll be happy about that. We both, Counselor, you've been here before. So this is a new time clock. You can see it clearer. Pay attention to the time clock. You each have 15 minutes. 5 minutes is reserved for rebuttal to appellant's counsel if you wish to use that. Please state your name and introduce who you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your argument. Now, with that said, I'll ask our marshal to call the first case for consideration.
Now calling case number A200814, Helena Koivu versus Miko Sakari Koivu.
If you're ready to go, appellant counsel, you have the floor.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kay Nord Hunt, and I represent the appellant Miko Koivu. Proper service of process is a fundamental requirement for initiating a lawsuit, and a core purpose of service is to provide the court jurisdiction over the defendant. Personal service on an individual involves manual delivery of the summons and petition into the hands of the defendant. The trial court held that a process server as a spectator at a professional hockey game's act of tossing a summons and petition.
But let me, Ms. Nordhunt, let me ask you a question about that, because this is what I thought was interesting about this case. And the way I understand the record, there was an attempt at having he or your client or his attorney sign off as receiving it by mail. So that didn't work. Did the service of process then jump from that attempt to the attempt at the arena? Or were the other attempts, I didn't see it in your papers and I didn't see it in the respondent papers. It seems to me like it was quite a leap to all of a sudden go from something that extreme, from a mailed attempt.
And actually, Your Honor, there wasn't even a proper mail attempt. Under Rule 4.05, you have to mail it to the defendant himself at his address. That wasn't done here. So there was actually no attempt of service in accord with any of the rules of civil procedure before this event at the hockey arena.
I mean, of course, we all know and understand the argument is whether he was attempting to evade or ditch service of process. And that's why I was surprised no one made an allegation that there'd been other attempts or that he'd been available or was not making himself available. So is there anything in the record that you can direct us to that we should look at or not see as it relates to your client in terms of these attempts at getting him served?
Well, Your Honor, I see nothing in the record of any attempt of personal service, none. I mean, you had this process server that showed up, as I said, at the hockey arena. The only thing that's in the record is that there was a letter to Mr. Koivu's attorney saying, you know, will you admit service or will he admit service? But that would be asking for a waiver of service, which is not, you know, service. So that's what the record shows.
Do we need, and I noticed in your documents you did not, there was no picture in the record of the XL Energy Center tunnel, I don't know what else to call it, where the players go in and out. Is that necessary, or do we rely on the court's determination as to how this was described by both yourself as well as respondents' counsel?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, it's described in detail by my client in his affidavit in support of dismissal of this case for insufficient service of process. All you have from the respondent is the process server's affidavit which he filed with the service of process. The process server did not respond. There was no response made to my client's explanation of what occurred that evening. So that's what the record shows.
I have another question. If we agreed with you and we determined that process was not served, what would prohibit wife in this matter from reserving, and then you're right back where you're at trying to argue which jurisdiction venue is going to be applicable in this case? I mean, is this an effort at futility that we're going to be right back here? Because if we dismissed it on that and said, well, so what, you're going to have to start all over, wouldn't you have the same argument coming back?
To your point, Your Honor, there is nothing preventing them from, you know, properly serving my client. And whether we would be back again on the same argument, I don't know.
It seems to me that we wouldn't be even advancing to the other arguments that are a part of this case, because we would dismiss it as an appellate proceeding on service of process. Then you start all over. So here we are, and it would be kind of nice to get this moving on and give the parties at least some hope for closure down their own respective paths. I guess that's not much of a question, but to me, it just seems as if the same process, the same arguments would arise.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, service of process rules need to be applied. And if they are not, if there is not proper service of process, the court has no option but to dismiss this action for lack of personal jurisdiction, and it ends. Now, whether, you know, it's restarted again by respondent in Minnesota, I don't know. I mean, you know, there is an action in Finland. So I don't really know if this would come back to any court again. But what I do know is that the service of process was not accomplished in accord with the rules. There was insufficient service of process. The court lacks personal jurisdiction and the case should be dismissed.
Ms. Nordhunt, I have a question along those lines. According to husband's own affidavit, he stated that he knew, not just his lawyer, but he personally knew that wife was trying to initialize divorce proceedings. But he stated and that she wanted him to sign it. But his response was that he was busy playing games and traveling, and apparently signing was not a simple task. That doesn't seem like a very strong argument to make, particularly when he admits in his own affidavit that he was aware of the attempt to initiate divorce proceedings.
But Your Honor, that's irrelevant, because if you're asking someone to waive the rules of process, I mean, a party can say, no, I'm not going to sign, or I'm not going to do it. Then you have to comply with one of the rules of service. So it really doesn't matter whether there was this earlier communication or not to his lawyer. The question is, was there service of process in accord with personal delivery?
But isn't really the issue, Ms. Nordhunt, whether a reasonable person would have understood that service was being attempted? And I think we can look at the totality of circumstances here, not just what happened at the day that the papers were actually served.
Your Honor, I strongly disagree with that assertion. I think you have to look solely at what occurred at the day that they attempted to make personal service. I mean, if you look at the Nielsen case, which is what they rely on, and if you look at how the Minnesota Supreme Court in Kmart Corporation versus the County of Clay at 711 Northwest 2nd 489, talks about Nielsen being a very limited exception where you can, it stands for the proposition that a defendant could not physically refuse to accept service when the defendant is in close proximity to the process server, was touched with the summons, but the defendant physically refused to take it, and the summons was placed in it easily accessible to him after refusing to take it. So we're talking about the acts at that point in time. You can extrapolate onto that some assertion that, well, there was, you know, efforts made to ask him to waive service. Like I said, the record doesn't show that that was communicated to the appellant before this service attempt. We do know from the record there was a letter to his counsel, but as the court is well aware, an attorney is not the agent of the client for service of process unless the client agrees to that, which of course didn't occur in this case.
So Ms. Nordhout, on that point, I wanted to ask Mr. Todd this as well. When I looked at the language from Nielsen, it talks about a reasonable person. I mean, so isn't that reasonable person that kind of objective, reasonable person, outside person, as opposed to subjectively what this individual knew? Or does the case law go into that?
I think it's looking at it objectively. And if you look at it objectively, let's look at it here. You have a spectator in a professional hockey game who's highly unlikely to have any actual physical contact with one of the players. This isn't a setting where you have a one-on-one interaction. So in Nielsen, you had the person who stopped to have lunch. The process server comes up to him, touches him with the summons. Nielsen says, I'm not going to take it, and it's left at his feet. Now contrast that here, where you have an arena with thousands of fans, multiple hockey players, coaches, and security guards. You have a process server tossing unidentified papers, doesn't announce even who they're going to, and then yells, you've been served. That's what we have, and the security guard picks up the papers.
But at this point, his affidavit, your client's affidavit, says that I stopped and asked the security guard what they were, and that to me seems to imply conduct in connection or along the lines of recognizing these were meant for him. I mean, he seems to, and then he says, I thought they were divorce papers. Doesn't that create a deference towards effective service process?
No. I mean, Nielsen, you can't go that far. I mean, what you have here is, I mean, you have papers tossed. It's true. The appellant says he asked what they were, but they were not, there was nothing where it was actually presented to the appellant. I mean, if we're going to have this tossing rule, which is what they're asking this court to do, that is, you know, an extreme from Nielsen. The Minnesota Supreme Court in the Clay case, which I just cited to you, was very clear that this is a narrow exception. And, you know, we've cited to you the case from the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, which obviously is not precedent there, but it's interesting because it's exactly the same problem, where you're tossing, you know, a paper at a baseball player in that case. So we can now have this tossing rule at music concerts, you know, where you have a public figure and you can just toss it in their vicinity. And if, you know, somebody picks it up and the person asks, well, what is it? Then we have good service. I don't see that Minnesota goes that far.
Paper airplane delivery of service in COVID times.
Right. Or drone delivery. I don't know.
You know? Your time is really expiring quickly, and we've spent a lot of time focusing on that. Could you move on to your other argument?
Right. The other arguments, as the court is well aware, are only, you know, before this court if the court decides that there was indeed personal jurisdiction. And then we ask the court to hold that the trial court's decision to have both the property piece and the child custody piece decided in Minnesota rather than in Finland was erroneous. In our briefs to the court, we've explained why Minnesota is an inconvenient forum. I think, you know, particularly when you look at the property piece, Finland is at home with the law that must govern this case. We have a short-term marriage, 5 years. The parties signed a prenuptial agreement in Finland before their marriage there. An action was commenced in Finland first and Finnish law applies. The party's financial records are in Finnish. They use Finnish banks. Appellant has...
Yeah, yes, I have a couple of questions along those lines. My first, well, maybe it's a question, maybe it's a statement. I'm not sure that this issue is even properly before us in terms of the property issue, but even assuming that it is, in terms of the form non-convenience argument, can you cite to any Minnesota decision that has actually reversed the district court when it has exercised jurisdiction over property? Most of the cases usually discuss, and the case law allows a district court to exercise jurisdiction or decline to exercise jurisdiction. And the reversals seem to be when the district court has declined and an appellate court has said, no, you actually do have jurisdiction. But can you cite to any case where a Minnesota appellate court has actually reversed a district court deciding to exercise jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of one, but we're talking about, as you know, an abuse of discretion standard. And our issue with the property division is the trial court didn't even apply the correct analysis. It decided to use the same factors that you apply to child custody jurisdiction to the issue of property division. And it's a different interest analysis. And the trial court didn't do that. And so that is an abuse of discretion. And if you look at the factors that you apply in those situations, the interest of the litigants, the ease of access to source of proof, the challenges of applying foreign law, I mean, all of these scream out for the fact that Finland is where this belongs, not Minnesota. I see my time is up. I ask that this court reverse and dismiss this action. In the alternative, if the court decides there is jurisdiction, to also reverse on the forum issue.
Thank you. We'll turn to you now, Mr. Todd.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, Ms. Hunt, and may it please the court. My name is James Todd, and I'm here on behalf of respondent Helena Koivu. Your Honors, Mr. Koivu's challenge.
Let's go back to where I started on this. So really, an attempt at mailed service and then leaping into dropping or pushing a paper over the edge of a tunnel, was there nothing in the middle, nothing between, no attempts?
Well, I believe there were attempts, but that is not admittedly well reflected in the record below.
I didn't see anything in the record. To me, it just seems very extreme.
Well, I don't think it's extreme when you have a situation where both parties are represented by divorce attorneys. Ms. Koivu's divorce attorney emailed Mr. Koivu's divorce attorney with the summons and petition asking for his cooperation on signing an admission of service. And there was follow-up. It wasn't just, there were two letters that went to his attorney after the fact. Mr. Koivu knew that service was being attempted, and you have this personal attempt. But I don't think that whether there was a jump from one to the other is particularly relevant here. What is relevant is Mr. Koivu's challenge to the personal service attempt as it existed, or as the his explanation of the facts dictate.
So would you agree then, Mr. Todd, that we shouldn't be looking at before, after? What we look at is what happened that day when service was in the arena, her stadium, whatever it was. That's the thing that we should be focused on if you look at Rule 4 and the case law, not whether the appellant knew he was being served or not, just that day.
Well, part of that day is whether he knew, because the question of what his knowledge was that day is relevant.
Well, what about whether what about whether he was evading? I mean, don't we take that case law into consideration if somebody's desperately trying to avoid service of process? That's why I'm asking about what led up to it. And I'm sorry, Judge Justin, you have a question, but if you'll answer first, Mr. Todd, and then Judge Justin has her question.
Certainly. And Your Honor is correct. I think that evading service is dispositive, but that's what we have here, whether the record shows additional service attempts or not, because we've got his, as Judge Reyes pointed out, we've got this admission in an affidavit that Mr. Koivu knew that personal service was being attempted. He knew that they wanted him to sign an admission of service and sort of indicated that, well, he would have done it, but he was too busy. You know, even though there was this follow-up correspondence, and there was also in that follow-up correspondence, Ms. Koivu's attorney at the time said, you know, we're taking this as a sign that he's avoiding service, and this is going to be a really contentious matter if he's not going to cooperate by signing an admission, which, you know, most represented people do. No, that's not the rule. He doesn't have to. I agree with that. But it is an indication when you consider all of the facts that he was avoiding service. But the more relevant factor is, was the process server and Mr. Koivu within speaking distance when personal service was attempted? Yes. Did the process server make such efforts as would convince a reasonable person, I believe in Mr. Koivu's shoes, that personal service was being attempted? Yes. You know, this idea that he was 20 feet up in the stands and tossed the papers down, the record does not reflect that. What the record reflects is that Mr. Koivu said, you know, I was walking through the tunnel, where the process server was too high for me to sign jerseys for fans, for example. That's not really saying that he was way up in the stands with thousands of other fans. That's not what he says in his affidavit. So he was within speaking distance, the process server to Mr. Koivu, and he did make efforts to serve him. And under Nielsen, that's it. That's all it takes to effect personal service. So Mr. Koivu was personally served. The second reason that we're asking this court to dismiss the remainder of Mr. Koivu's appeal, save for the issue that we must agree with him on, just that the court doesn't have the authority to order him without notice to dismiss the dissolution action in Finland, is that there is absolutely no showing by Mr. Koivu that the district court made a decision against the facts or logic in accepting jurisdiction over the custody of children who have always resided and currently do reside in Minnesota. And the third reason is that there's, to my mind, no legal justification for the proposition that the doctrine of forum non-convenience obligates a district court in any way to decline the jurisdiction it already has. But even if there were, Mr. Koivu fails to show how the district court abused its discretion by not declining its jurisdiction over the property issues in this case. And I think, you know, as to the service issue, Your Honor, as it is correct that if the court were to dismiss this case, there's nothing that would prevent Ms. Koivu from having to serve him again. He would again, you know, we could well be back here on the same issues of the UCCJEA and forum non-convenience all over again. I think that it is plainly a tack, it's gamesmanship. I don't think the court has to play along with that. Moreover, I don't think it's clear that if the court believes that there wasn't proper personal service under Mr. Koivu's facts, that the proper remedy is to completely reverse the district court. What the court could do in that event is remand it back to the district court, because we have competing facts here. We do have a difference of the affidavit of the process server says that he made eye contact with Mr. Koivu. Mr. Koivu denies that. The process server indicates that he attempted to hand the documents to Mr. Koivu and he avoided being handed them. So, you know, this idea that that they were tossed out there into the arena like a paper airplane is simply not in line, I think, either with Mr. Koivu's version of the facts, but it's certainly not in line with the process servers. So we do have a differing factual analysis that I think has to happen before the case should be summarily reversed.
Mr. Todd, I'm not sure if I necessarily agree with your suggestion of remanding, because the district court already made a decision. And so I think our role is limited in terms of determining whether or not the district court erred in making that decision. And it's a matter of whether or not there's compliance with the rule. If there's no compliance with the rule, we just reverse. And then your client would have to start from square one again. And as Ms. Nordhunt correctly points out, it's basically a first to file rule. And if the proceedings are going forward in Finland, I think that does make it a much harder road for you to go down in terms of trying to prove why this is a better forum than Finland. Because you know, one of the eight factors is the familiarity. And if Finland is moving forward and Minnesota is being delayed, certainly that doesn't seem to weigh in your favor, in your client's favor.
Well, first of all, there is no first to file. I mean, there is a first to file rule that is a rule of comity, meaning a respect between jurisdictions, but it is not a hard and fast rule. There's nothing that would preclude Ms. Koivu from bringing an action in Minnesota yet again to serve Mr. Koivu. Would her argument be slightly different because the facts have changed? Certainly. One of the factors is the familiarity of each court with the facts of the case. It's not a foregone conclusion in my mind, and this is sort of outside the record, that at this point that the court in Finland has any better knowledge of the facts than.
Well, we don't want to know what we know, especially about Finland. But I have a question for you. Let's get back on. If we agree with you and we say service of process, it was done, we'll move ahead. Husband brought a motion to strike the E2 visa that appears in your client's papers. And I was surprised that you're objecting to that. Do you need that E2 visa? What is the strength of that E2 visa when we look at the custody of the children and so on?
You're absolutely correct, Your Honor. No, we don't need the E2 visa, but I do think that it is highly relevant because, as Mr. Koivu points out in his brief, he's in Ohio now. He's not in Finland. It doesn't matter where the parties are, and I think he premised his argument to the district court about whether Minnesota was an inconvenient forum for the adjudication of custody on this idea that that both parties were going to have to leave the country in 6 weeks. Now, the district court correctly ruled that the affidavit of Ms. Koivu's expert immigration attorney really undercut that, because as her attorney explained, not only was that not true in and of itself, but the very fact that she had these pending applications before the USCIS meant that she had an updated legal status as long as those applications were pending. But you know what we're saying with our addendum is, well, now we know where she is, where she can lawfully stay. It's a government document. It's capable of reasonable verification publicly. It supports the district court's result. I think the court should take judicial notice of that document because it's highly relevant and it supports the district court's reasoning. I mean, we've cited case law in our response to Mr. Koivu's motion to strike that supports the idea that this court can, in limited cases, take judicial notice of facts outside the record. I mean, of course this fact wasn't in the record below. It couldn't have been, right? Neither could the fact that Mr. Koivu decided not to return to Finland and to play hockey in Ohio. It seems to me to be a double standard because you know, why does Mr. Koivu get to present that fact and Ms. Koivu doesn't? Well, because somebody wrote a newspaper article about him playing hockey for Ohio. That's what he's essentially saying. But because Ms. Koivu's not similarly in the public eye, she can't present this government document that's capable of verification, not subject to reasonable dispute, and supports the result obtained in the district court. That to me does not, that seems profoundly unfair.
Mr. Todd, if I may take you back to the service of process issue. I'm speaking just for myself, not for the panel. I'm concerned that if it was improper to, in making this decision for the district court to consider that the Mr. Koivu knew that service was being attempted, and we're only left with what's the distance? Did he see the process server? That's inadequate to establish service of process. So can you just give me, you know, the best case or that could establish from your perspective that there's enough, even if we felt we could not look at his knowledge, his subjective knowledge, that service of process was being attempted?
Well, certainly. I think that what is enough is that, you know, let's say hypothetically in arguendo, we'll take that fact of his actual knowledge out of it. He was walking off the ice through a tunnel. The process server was within speaking distance and said, "You've been served," and dropped the papers in front of him. He asked the security guard to pick them up. What were they? He also says that it was extremely embarrassing to him. It was extremely embarrassing, he puts in his affidavit, because of it was in front of his teammates and other fans.
Why does that matter if we're looking at a reasonable person?
It doesn't matter, except it impliedly says that he knew that the process server was attempting to serve him. Because why else would it be embarrassing if somebody just throws paper down and yells, "You've been served"? It could have been anybody. But it was embarrassing because it was Mr. Koivu, and Mr. Koivu knew that. I think that, you know, Your Honors, I see my time is up. If I could briefly finish here.
You could, if you'll sum up. Thank you.
Well, in sum, Your Honor, we're asking the district court to, or we're asking this court to affirm the district court's ruling on service and on the UCCJEA jurisdiction analysis and on its taking property issues under foreign nonconvenience. Thank you, Your Honors.
Back to you, Ms. Nordhunt. You have the last word.
With regard to service, I want to be very clear that not waiving service has nothing to do with avoiding service. I mean, those are two different concepts. You know, a party can decide to waive service and say you have to comply with the rules of civil procedure with service. So what we're looking at here is not a situation of avoiding service, but whether you have a situation where the respondent complied with personal delivery, which is how they chose to serve, on the events of the evening at the hockey game. Now, if we look at the record in this case, and the respondent has some of the facts wrong, even according to the process server, because what you had is a situation is where you've got the process server is a fan. He's waving some papers. He never identifies what the papers are. And then he says, after he drops the documents down, he says, "You've been served." He doesn't even identify who he's serving. He doesn't say Mr. Koivu's name. He just drops the documents. The security guard picks them up because fans can't, you know, drop stuff. And Mr. Koivu, walking by, asks what they are, and the security guard then says what they are. Now, for this court to say that is personal delivery and that it somehow falls within what Nielsen said is a vast expansion of anything the Minnesota Supreme Court has ever allowed with regard to personal delivery. And it would be contrary to Minnesota law as I read Nielsen and as the Minnesota Supreme Court itself explained Nielsen afterwards. When we're talking about being within speaking distance, we're talking about where in Nielsen, you can actually touch the person with the summons. That's speaking distance. If you're in thousands of fans and you got a hockey player on the ice or coming through the tunnel and you got fans, that's not within speaking distance.
Ms. Nordhunt, the problem we have is we're reconciling two affidavits. We have the process server that says, I said his name, I made eye contact and held the documents. And when your client put his head down, that's when the documents were dropped. I mean, you know, that takes it a little bit away from case law because we have competing versions of what happened.
I don't think so, because let's look at what he says. He says, I say his name and I'm holding out documents or holding papers. Okay, we're in a hockey arena. You have fans wanting autographs. I mean, what in the world is that, holding out papers? He doesn't say, I have a process. He doesn't say anything of the sort. And what we have here is we have a situation where we have the process server's affidavit, which is pretty bare bones. And then we have my client's affidavit explaining in more detail what occurred. And we have no response by the respondent. I mean, the respondent could come back and say, no, Mr. Koivu is wrong. I mean, they didn't do that. That's what happens in these insufficient service of process cases, is as if you're disagreeing with what Mr. Koivu says as to what happened, you have the opportunity at the district court to reply. They didn't. I mean, so that's why I think the trial court, accepted Mr. Koivu's version of events, because there was no response. And so what we have here is we have a situation where, it's nothing akin to anything that the court has ever allowed to be personal service. Nothing.
We spent a lot of time on that. We really haven't talked about the forum, best forum in terms of the custody issues with respect to the children, and time is very short here. And speaking of time, one of the issues that you take issue with is factor number two in terms of the length of time the children have resided outside the state. Your arguments seem to go more toward what is going to happen in the future, where either or both parents are going to be spending the time, but you don't really talk too much about the length of time the children have resided outside the state, which is only a fraction of the time that they've actually spent in Minnesota. So I don't understand how that factor actually weighs in favor of your client.
Well, I think you have to look at it in the context that neither of the parties are permanent residents of the United States.
We're looking at the children. That factor focuses on the children, not the parents.
Right. Well, I mean, where the parents, reside is important for the children.
The U.S. And the youngest child is only a citizen of the U.S.
Right, but can become a citizen of Finland. But the fact is they spent more time in Minnesota because of appellant's employment with the Minnesota Wild.
Why does that matter?
Well,
where the children live, this is where their children go to school, this is where the children have their friends, childcare. Isn't really the focus of that, shouldn't that be on the children?
Well, and on the children, we look at the fact that they have a home in Finland, that they spend time in Finland when he was not playing in the United States, in Minnesota.
How much time is that as a percentage compared to their time in Minnesota?
Well, according to the record, they spent their summers in Finland and then some holidays. There's some dispute between the parties about the holidays. And then you have the situation where the fact that the relatives are all in Finland, and it's only one factor here as to the time in Minnesota versus the other factors. And the court seems to be putting too much, in our view, emphasis on that given the other factors.
And your time has run, but does that answer your question, Judge Reyes?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right, with that said, both parties, I want to compliment you on your submissions as well as your arguments today. We will deem these matters submitted and a decision will be issued in the statutory timeframe. Thank you for appearing today.